Step 2. Get connected. The three simple rules of understanding your own worth, getting your ego straight about connecting, and working the system for all it's worth. Now we get to the part where the rubber meets the road. I meet a lot of people who study writing and salesmanship enough to get good at it, and they even occasionally find a job where they can get paid doing it. But they skip the part that creates true independence in a writer. They never learn how to get connected with those people, institutions, publications, businesses, and organizations that will act as an army dedicated to 1. Keeping you booked with work, 2. Keeping your name circulating so your reputation stays red hot, and 3. Keeping your bank account stuffed with cash from fees, royalties, and income. It doesn't do you much good to be a world-class writer, does it, if no one knows who you are, where to reach you, or how you can help them? So a huge part of creating your career as a copywriter is to find that hidden undercurrent in the business world where all the other big fish swim. I call it a hidden undercurrent because it is invisible to outsiders. However, once you get a toehold in it, you'll be astonished at how quickly you can become an insider with a capital I. It's a small world on the inside of marketing. There are a handful of big fish who are the well-known gurus and the Hall of Fame marketers and writers. Then there's a large population of middle-sized fish, the up-and-coming writers, the marketers well on their way to earning jaw-dropping fortunes, and the printers and list brokers and media experts and letter shops and webmasters and other clued-in providers of services that make marketing work. Then there are the whole bunch of little tiny fishes, beginners just earning a reputation, marketers in the middle of their first big win, and the support staffs that make offices and warehouse and fulfillment centers run. And yet, put them all together, and it's such a tiny fraction of the population of this country that it barely registers as a percentage point. When you're on the inside, you will never want for lack of camaraderie, but from the outside, the entire undercurrent may remain invisible. Writers complain about this sometimes because we are faced with constantly needing to explain what we do. It would be a simpler world if all businesses understood the power of direct marketing and appreciated good, ballsy, personalized copy. They do not. And in a way, this is an advantage. As you enter the ranks of veteran freelancer, you will be one of a very few who have learned the keys to great marketing. It's a mixed blessing, of course, but it is what it is. So, alrighty then, let's get busy making this invisible world visible to you with the three rules of successful freelancing. I have three rules I want to carve into your brain as we cruise through this section. I will start listing them soon. They are the roadmap I use to become a successful freelancer. But first, I have to soften you up so you're ready to understand them. The first two rules are about your mindset. I'm going to take a long time explaining these rules to you because no matter how simple they may seem, most guys get it wrong. Your mindset is all important as a freelancer because you're working without a net. Sometimes freelancers hook up with each other for a while because it's good to have company, sometimes. The great ones almost always go back to working alone, however. If you team up on a permanent basis, you get closer to becoming a mini agency, which is fine. And if you decide to actually join a real agency or work in-house with any one business exclusively, you're still going to need the sobering comfort of these rules to keep your chops sizzling hot. The nature of the freelance game, however, is working more or less alone. You may have an assistant, but the act of writing is a solitary occupation. Committees murder ads. And alone, you need to have your head straight about your value to the business community and about the reasons why you cannot afford to stop learning or keeping your connections stroked and nurtured. It took me a long time to realize the worth of these simple rules. When I lost track of them, I lost steam, made stupid compromises, sacrificed money I was due. I lost the will to write, even occasionally. When I was successful, I was following these rules, though unconsciously at first. I've had several dips in my career, and it slowly dawned on me as I climbed out of the financial, mental, and professional holes I had created. that I was actually using a set of identifiable rules to get successful again. When these rules finally crystallized in my mind, I knew I had to write this course. The first two rules, as I said, are about your mindset. Very important. The third is hardcore information about getting connected. That's the rule most people will think is the, quote, money shot, unquote, of this course, because it's all about numbers, actions, stuff to do. But you must remember that no career is a straight line from start to finish. You're going to constantly encounter obstacles. Clients die, the economy tanks and causes a whole slate of your ads to fail, your computer crashes and you lose manuscripts, and you miss deadlines. The business world is a vast, bizarre land of wonders and terrors. There are opportunities to ride the financial coattails of a client zooming to success, or see a check bounce because of bankruptcy or embezzlement. Federal agents routinely storm offices and lock clients out when their accounting goes sour. The boss may worship you, but the marketing VP may hate your ass with a vile vengeance, sabotaging everything you do. This actually happens a lot. You will encounter garden variety criminals and outright thievery by clients who have had an ethical bypass, and you will meet some of the nicest people to ever walk this earth. You will be ripped off, and you will be helped by anonymous friends who send work your way and insist on not even being owed a favor. It's a jungle out there, an amazing, exciting, dangerous, and volatile jungle. I can go on with the horror stories, you know. I've known copywriters who were on top of their game, writing like a champ and hitting home runs right and left, and then they got divorced or discovered a cancerous lump somewhere or lost everything in a dumb stock market ploy. Burnout is a common ailment among writers. That's why I spent so much time talking about the physical side of writing in the last section. It's critical. Your career depends on your brain, that lump of soft, spongy material in your skull where all the thinking, pondering, solving, and creating happens. But your brain is dependent on your heart, and your heart is dependent on your lungs, which breathe air from the outside world, where all sorts of things out of your control will conspire to mess with your desire to simply write fabulous copy and make a fortune. That's why these three simple rules are so important. I talk with a vast number of insiders every day. There's a special camaraderie among us because only another insider can understand what being one is like. Take the subject of deadlines. That can get us bitching and moaning for hours. I've never missed a deadline in my life, but that doesn't mean meeting deadlines are easy. Other writers consider my record almost criminal, because most writers do at least occasionally miss deadlines. It's the most common screw-up in the business. I strongly recommend you promise yourself right now that you will never miss a deadline. We'll discuss this in detail later. We talk about deadlines because they are always hovering over us. And professional writers talk about dealing with difficult, stupid, or just plain clueless clients, and about banks that shut down merchant accounts for no good reason, and about printers who screw up jobs, and office staff who lose files, and on and on and on. We talk about this stuff, and then, after we've blown off some steam, we get down to business. Once I identified these three simple rules, I saw how they were deeply embedded, though mostly unconsciously, in every top professional I know. Sometimes we lose sight of them. Sometimes even the best suffer from doubt. Many years ago, I remember talking with Gary Halbert, one of the great legends of direct marketing and a deeply respected guru. He was in the dumps. Like most of the geniuses I know, he was prone to bouts of self-doubt, to the notion that fate had it out for him. He was entertaining the thought that he'd lost it, lost the ability to write great pieces, to engineer home run campaigns, to understand the market at all. I let him complain for a while, and then I told him something he's never forgot it. "God damn it," I said, "you're Gary Halbert. You have the best track record in advertising. You've pissed away more money than most successful men can expect to earn in their lifetime. Look at what you have accomplished." And that woke him up. He was not an ordinary man. None of the top copywriters are. Over and over again, through 40 years of advertising, he had encountered and defeated obstacles and problems that might have killed an ordinary man. But, like all of us, prolonged doubt led to a virulent case of defeatism. He just needed a little boost to shake it off. And he did shake it off. Boy, did he ever shake it off. In fact, he went on to make more money than he had in the previous 20 years combined. and meet the love of his life. Not because of me, of course. I just slapped him upside the head and reminded him who he was. He probably would have got there again on his own. Probably. But it didn't hurt to be reminded of what the right mindset can accomplish. Gary had the opportunity, by the way, years later, to return the favor to me. Thanks, pal. Since then, I've made it a habit to reinforce the confidence of every colleague I know. These mindset rules are crucial. So drill this into your brain. Your hidden partner in your freelance career will always be Mr. Confidence. Make him real inside of you and base his existence on these simple rules I'm going to share with you. Babe Ruth used to strike out 8 times in a row in a doubleheader. To shake out of any slump, he had to remember his own few simple rules that applied only to hitters of his ability. Rules like these. He'd done it before. He knew the fundamentals of doing it right. He knew things could go wrong, and he knew how to go back and correct what was wrong and then do it right again. He had his head straight about who he was, where he stood in the scheme of things, and what he was capable of. You have to get your head straight, too. If you follow my instructions and get your fundamentals down and become a writer and work the system and get your head straight about your place in the world, then no matter what else happens, you will have the skills to recover and succeed and thrive even in the midst of chaos. God damn it, you're a copywriter. So don't skip over these rules, wondering when we're going to get to the juicy stuff. This is the juicy stuff. This is the foundation of great. Rule number one, never forget that the entire business world is starved for great copywriting. Most small businesses, when it comes to advertising, are like men who can't swim, tossed into the middle of the ocean. They desperately need rescuing. Most large businesses regard advertising as an occult science that chews up their cash flow, yet they are terrified of not doing it. They have mixed feelings about marketing because they're usually doing it wrong. They're not tracking response, not following basic salesmanship rules, and on. And most ad agencies do not have a single staff person who really understands world-class copywriting. This includes the international agencies responsible for all the multi-million dollar ads you see on TV. I want you to remember this rule at all times, especially when you encounter obstacles in your path to becoming a successful writer. If you follow the advice I gave you in Section 1, Getting Good, then you will be one of the few people in the country who have taken the trouble to learn the fundamentals of great copywriting. When you then talk about copy, you will be absolutely confident you're talking about proven tactics. And once you have a few winners under your belt, you'll be able to talk from experience and numbers, and you'll be able to insist with authority that comes from total confidence that they do it your way. This kind of authority, backed up with proven confidence, will allow you to charge outrageous fees with a straight face because what you provide is worth it. You're not pulling stuff out of your ass. You're not reinventing any wheels. You're operating as part of the continuum of great salesmanship that stretches back to when the first caveman sold a haunch of meat to another caveman. You're using stuff that has been proven to work over and over again throughout history. You're going to generate orders, increase the customer base, and sell the heck out of whatever your client is flogging. It may be mysterious magic to the rest of the world, but to you, steeped in your fundamentals, it's just good, solid salesmanship. Even as you struggle to get clients, to earn larger fees, to get a reputation going, just keep reminding yourself of this simple fact. Every business in the world needs to advertise, and most of them absolutely suck at it. This doesn't mean they will welcome you with open arms whenever you show up, or that they will stalk you in hopes of hiring you at your outrageous fees, because the astonishing general ignorance of salesmen in print in the business community means that most of them do not value great writing. They do not know good advertising when they see it. They do not know how to test advertising. They do not get the enormous potential of direct response marketing. Often, when you're dealing with clients, you will have to educate them as you help them. Your first choice, always, is to work with clients who already know the power of great copy and who already are savvy about direct marketing and good advertising. In fact, for many years now, I have refused to work with anyone who questions what I do. It's a perk of having a reputation based on getting results. And even back when I was still taking on the occasional clueless client, as you will have to do while you create your own reputation, I had two fees. My standard fee, which was high enough to cause the client to choke, that I charged was when it was clearly understood that they would run or mail whatever I wrote without causing any grief or asking for endless rewrites because they were scared to run ballsy advertising. And then I had a clueless fee for the clients who had found me through recommendations who were not savvy about what kind of advertising really works, and who would cause me days of frustration convincing them to run or mail what I produced. This clueless fee was often twice the amount I charged savvier clients, and sometimes triple. I punished them financially because long ago I discovered two things about charging clients. One, giving a client a break on the fee will not make him grateful and easier to work with. In fact, it will often make him harder to deal with. The few times I felt sorry for a client who insisted he needed a world-class ad to save his butt, but needed a break on my fee because he just couldn't afford the full price, I got royally screwed in the deal. Consciously or unconsciously, he saw my kindness as weakness, and that obliterated my authority and my ability to force him to do the right thing. Since he'd successfully negotiated my price, he figured he could negotiate what the advertising looked like too. It's a mistake I had to repeat only a few times before learning the lesson behind it. Two, charging a fee high enough to make his head handshake as he writes the check puts two important thoughts in the client's mind. A, I must know what I'm doing because I'm charging so much, and B, he'd better stay out of the way and let me do what I do best and not argue or try to change things. He wants to get his money's worth. It's psychological gamesmanship, I know. But as I mentioned in the last section, there's an old saying among businessmen, no good deed goes unpunished. I suppose it's a cousin of the nice guys finish last. Get straight on this. You do not need to be an asshole to get the job done. You do, however, need to be the guy who's in charge. You are dealing with a world that doesn't understand what you're doing as a writer. Trying to educate most businessmen about advertising can be like trying to teach a donkey to change the oil in your car. And until you get to the stage where clients are pursuing you and are willing to do whatever you say, you're going to continually run into clueless clients who want to fight you every step of the way. It will be frustrating. It will be difficult to get your letters and ads run or mailed the right way. You will fail often at getting these clients to follow your instructions. You will want to tear your hair out. And that's when I want you to remember rule number one. The business world is starving for great advertising. You're the guy who has trained himself to deliver it. There aren't many of you out there. So don't get hung up on any one client, especially one who causes you grief. Give him a chance, even several chances, to come around. Insist on gunfight at the OK Corral type test, your way against his way if you must. Mail half a list with your copy, the other half with the changes they've insisted on. Mail them head to head. Let them stand toe to toe and slug it out. Get numbers back on how many sales or new customers or leads come from each piece. Do whatever you have to do to get your ad to run, to get your letter mailed, to get your web copy posted. As we'll discuss in Getting Paid, you will sometimes even want to pay for the test yourself. The client may not believe you, may be in denial about what constitutes good marketing, but it's damn hard to argue against actual figures. If you can get a test done, you'll have figures, and you'll be able to use numbers and results as a weapon. And if he still doesn't come around, take the money you've earned, let him do what he wants, and walk away. Walk away from bad situations that threaten to destroy your self-respect. Walk away from bad deals. And walk away from anybody who thinks writers are at the bottom of the food chain. You're not. You are the friggin' food chain. When you get good at copywriting, Even though many businesses will not recognize your worth immediately, there are always plenty of other businesses who will. In fact, they are desperate for good copy. Their business depends on good copy. They will shrivel and die without good copy, and you're the guy who knows how to deliver good copy. So stay calm, keep honing your chops, use proven salesmanship tactics, and follow the advice of great writers. This ain't brain surgery. But to most of the business world, it seems like magic. And because you know how the spells are cast, you'll always have something to offer a client. That's a powerful thing to remember. It will help you stay focused. Important note. In Kick-Ass Copywriting Secrets, Chapter 18, I urged you to put aside your screw you money. This is enough cash to meet your nut for 6 months to a year. Do not invest this money in anything riskier than bank CDs. Keep part of it in small bills somewhere, like a safe deposit box. This money is not an investment. It's not there to earn interest, not there to play with. It's your backup partner to be used only when absolutely necessary. As I tell people, if you never touch this stash for the rest of your life, it's done its job. Having this money hidden away changes your attitude on a basic level. You don't need any job to pay the next month's rent. If any client becomes a total jerk, you can walk away knowing you will never starve because you've got that money socked away. You can tell him, screw you, I'm out of here. But you know what? Just knowing you have the power to walk away changes you at the cellular level. You don't need his measly fee. And clients sense that. You won't have a whiff of desperation on you, and they will immediately sense that their standard bullying tactics won't work. The result? You are in charge from minute one. You're like the handsome guy in the bar who refuses to play games with any of the women who want his attention. Your skills equal handsome. The clients are like the yearning women, or vice versa if you're a woman reading this. You don't have to play games, don't have to negotiate from hunger, don't have to take any grief at all. You're in charge because you have to be in order to get the ad run the way you know it should be run, because you're the expert. You have the fundamentals, the experience, the track record, the inside scoop on what works. And if they don't like it, you can walk with a clear conscience and not a drop of sweat over meeting your nut. I put my screw you money aside almost 20 years ago and haven't touched it. I won't either if I don't have to. It's my invisible partner. It's the spine in me. Rule number two, consider yourself a lifelong apprentice of great advertising. With an important caveat, you are willing to apprentice yourself only with the specific goal of getting connected. Let me explain. First off, many people have forgotten what the word apprentice even means. Basically, throughout history, most professions had a three-tiered ladder of expertise. You began as a raw rookie, an apprentice, and learned the trade under the tutelage of an experienced professional, a journeyman. For a few journeymen who got really, really good, the next step was to become the foreman or boss. This is important to understand because this method of creating professionals has pretty much disappeared in our society. Big shame, too. Civilization has suffered because of it. But understanding this arcane process can be a huge boon to you. It's the secret key to quickly entering the inside world of advertising and marketing. Here's the short version of the story. Long ago, most skilled labor formed itself into guilds, which were tight organizations that acted a bit like modern unions. In the ancient world, if you wanted to be a scribe, which is what they called writers, you had to enter a club that was as secretive and mysterious as the cults that produced priests. This was because the skills required to write required a long apprenticeship under the direct teaching of someone who was already really good at it. By the Middle Ages, there were guilds for every type of skilled labor in existence. If you wanted to be a bricklayer, you had to join the Bricklaying Guild and suffer all kinds of initiation rites and swear on your life never to divulge the secrets of the art of bricklaying and be a slave while you apprenticed and worked hard to earn the status of a journeyman. Today, however, even the concept of apprenticeship has pretty much vanished from the American culture outside of unions. Rookies now routinely have to blunder their way through jobs without much formal training. The youngsters even scoff at the idea of earning their keep, and they resist the efforts of the journeymen who try to teach them. They refuse to acknowledge that they have a lot to learn. The structure of apprenticeship, where an experienced, hard-ass journeyman was assigned to teach the rookie the tricks of the trade, has been largely forgotten. Beginners are now incredibly lucky to have anyone take them under their wing. The result is a business culture full of veterans who don't understand their own professions in any depth. High school basketball players skip college and head for the NBA at 18. Kobe Bryant aside, most suffer and fail. Journalists go straight from class to standing in front of a television camera and learn to mumble as a bluff so no one can tell if they haven't got a clue what incisive reporting is all about. Rock bands go from the garage to center stage. One reason the Beatles were so damn good is that they logged several years playing dingy bars in Germany before even entering a recording studio. They earned their chops. And nearly all ad agencies are staffed with clueless writers who learn their trade by watching television and being the class clown. They never worked with a real salesman, never spent a minute learning the secrets of great marketing. And they laugh at the idea they have anything to learn about advertising. After all, they're getting paid as a copywriter, aren't they? What's to know? I am increasingly coming to the realization that civilization survives in spite of the human race, not because of it. We are increasingly putting our culture in the hands of younger and younger know-nothings who couldn't care less about learning their trade in depth. They don't know history, don't care about what went on before they were born, consider the world a simple place to operate in as long as your attitude is cool, just like on TV. So what does all this mean to you? Two very important things. One, if you ever get the chance to work with a veteran old-school direct response copywriter, do it. Even if it's only doing grunt work for him, researching info, writing up special reports, even monitoring the letter shop during a mailing. The concept of apprenticeship rubs many people wrong because their ego gets in the way. These people seldom become wildly successful. In a few pages, I will talk about grunt work apprenticeships that are invaluable. Two, if you think of yourself as an apprentice for life in advertising, you will never get stale. There are a ton of experienced copywriters out there who still think it's 1962. Their mindset will not allow them to learn new things. You, on the other hand, should never balk at learning something new. While the basics of great salesmanship do not change, the tactics of advertising often do. I just found a guy who lectured me for an hour on email autoresponders, and I ate it up as if I were a raw rookie, taking notes and asking detailed questions. And the guy was half my age. He had only been in the business world for a couple of years. Here is how the apprenticeship for life attitude continues to work for me. When I started out as a freelancer, it was just me and my typewriter against the world, and I was doing pretty good. I had carved out a little niche in Los Angeles as a hotshot freelancer. I'll tell you how in a minute. I earned thousands for each job. Yet when I met up with Jay Abraham, I offered to do writing for him for free on my own time in exchange for just being able to hang around his office and occasionally sit in on meetings. Astonishingly, he agreed. If he'd asked me to sweep up too, I would have done it. Though through that toehold, I met up with a man named John Finn while in Jay's office, who at the time was acquainted with several world-class copywriters. He had convinced these writers that it might be worth their time to hire an up-and-comer with serious chops like me to help them complete certain jobs, be a ghostwriter, in fact, and astonishingly, they agreed. Through John, I was teamed up with Jim Rutz, easily one of the greatest copywriters of all time, and a man I might never have otherwise been introduced to. Jim paid me a small but very fair considering fee. He spent a good deal of time telling me what he expected and then dumped the job on me. It was a sales letter for a well-known contrarian financial newsletter out of Texas. Jim expected me to slave away at this project and not complain, so I worked like a fiend to come up with a first draft worthy of showing him, and he was fairly impressed. But he tore it up anyway and sent me back to the computer. No one had ever done that to me before. I mean, I was an experienced writer at this point. I had to swallow hard to keep my cool, but I did it. And I went back to my office to start over on the piece. The guy was a perfectionist, which I most definitely am not. He wanted every damn word in that piece to be exactly right. It took a full month to complete the job. I forced myself to start thinking like a perfectionist and figured out how to correct the mistakes in my writing before he caught them. I lost sleep, I lost friends, but I never lost focus on the prize, extracting every iota of experience, excuse me, extracting every iota of expertise this world-class writer had to offer me. I was exhausted and a wreck by the time he finally agreed that, indeed, the piece now lived up to his expectations. It was his basic concept, but 90% of the writing was mine, written and rewritten a dozen times under his sharp eye in relentless quest for the perfect sales letter. But I'd learned a thousand lessons about great writing during this grunt apprenticeship process and about making a piece work. That sales letter mailed for almost 8 years. All the royalties went to Jim. I only received a little compensation on the front end with no back-end commission whatsoever. That was the deal, and it was a good one. Jim didn't need me. He took me under his wing and made my life hell for a while, but I came out of it an infinitely better writer. I did three jobs, I believe, with Jim, and then I was teamed up with another world-class writer, Steve Barwick. Steve and I worked more like partners with a lot of back and forth, but there was never any question that I was there to learn. Soon after that, I had a chance to write up some special reports for Gary Benzavinga. This was pure grunt work. I wasn't writing any part of the sales pitch, but only writing up the giveaway material that was offered free with the main product. To an observer, it probably looked like a step down for me, since I was already the author of successful pieces and really deserved to be doing nothing but super important work. But it wasn't a step down. Gary B. is hands down the most experienced copywriter in the world among the largest direct mail the largest direct mail mailers. Just those few days of work that we did together offered me amazing insights about writing I'd never realized before. I also was introduced to new clients through these contacts, people it would have taken years to have reached directly on my own without an introduction. A whole new world of possibility opened up to me. And soon after that, I met Gary Halbert and began writing for him. He also was a harsh taskmaster. But after a year or so, he didn't have to correct my writing anymore. I had arrived. I started partnering with him rather than just being the grunt writer. So, through hard work and luck I created from that hard work, I managed to apprentice under some of the greatest writers in advertising, all within a period of just a couple of exciting years. I was humble, open to criticism, and eager to do an over-the-top good job at every step. More importantly, without even realizing it at the time, I was embracing each step as part of a learning curve where I couldn't even see where the next step would come from. Looking back, it almost seems planned out, but it wasn't. As I will explain in a moment, each contact held immense opportunity for other contacts. The advertising world is like a spider web. Everyone and everything are connected, though it is almost impossible for an outsider to see how this is so. I have a worldwide reputation now. I'm a guru teaching other people in the mysterious art of copywriting. I have followers in Australia, Italy, Saudi Arabia, New Zealand, Asia. Heck, even some Canadians are in the fold. Imagine that, eh? And yet, as I just mentioned, only last week I spent an hour apprenticing under the tutelage of a kid I met through a brand new acquaintance who found me through someone I'd only recently been introduced to from a friend I'd known for years. And I listened to that kid because he knew things I was eager to learn. Because in my mind, I am a lifelong apprentice in advertising. I have a fairly big ego. I admit it and even rejoice in it. It's part of having huge self-respect. When I've earned something, I feel damn good about it. I enjoy my reputation. I enjoy being a teacher. There's no guilt on this puppy. But I easily and quickly put my ego aside when I have an opportunity to learn something new. Right now, we're in a vibrant period of change and innovation in marketing, and most of the really exciting stuff is happening on the web. The salesmanship behind the writing isn't different. That will never change. But the way the copy is delivered, digested by prospects, and the way orders are taken and followed up on is often unique. An apprentice for life. Remember that. Be a sponge. Now I'm going to repeat myself here, because I want to be sure you get it. Each of the apprenticeships I did created the opportunity for the next one. Step one. First, I self-apprenticed myself at the library and got cozy with the fundamentals. Step two. Then I took on every measly and pathetic job that came my way while I worked through all the rookie mistakes I had to make. And I learned how to meet deadlines and deal with clients. Step three. I took my show out on the road, hitting the agencies and taking on private business clients. Step four. By the time I met up with Jay Abraham, I had completed my shameless whoring period and was already a lean and mean writer on the A-list among several local ad agencies who used freelancers. Be patient. I'll tell you in a moment how to contact agencies yourself, if that's something you want to do. Now, I could have remained the hotshot freelancer that agencies snuck in the back door to do the work their own clueless creatives couldn't pull off. It was a good-paying gig. I was making more money than I ever had before in my life. But again, unconsciously, because I hadn't yet figured out exactly what it was I was doing, I didn't consider my career completed. So I was always on the hunt for opportunities to increase my worth as a writer. Always. And you have to look hard, too, because sometimes these connection opportunities cross your path as nothing more than whispers. This one sure didn't arrive with blaring trumpets. As it turned out, a creative director at an agency I freelanced for suspected she was about to be fired, and she had taken to scouring the want ads in the newspaper for new writing jobs. Now, I did that too, but for some reason I missed a pretty good posting one day in the Los Angeles Times, and as an afterthought, before I left this woman's office, she casually brought it to my attention. A guy in Palos Verdes was looking for copywriters. It was a damn well-written ad, too. She, however, thought it was too full of hype, but I instantly recognized it as something written by a fellow traveler. It was Jay Abraham. At that time, he was not as well known as he is now, had yet to put on a single seminar. He was just building his reputation as the marketing genius who was afraid to fly. Gary Halbert wrote that Afraid to Fly ad for him, by the way. This was, it turned out, a tremendous opening for me, and I almost missed it. I would have missed it if I hadn't disciplined myself to constantly be on the lookout for exactly these kinds of hidden opportunities. Take this lesson to heart. Keep an eagle eye out for otherwise overlooked connections. Step four led to step five very quickly. Jay was honing what were at the time some pretty cutting-edge marketing tactics, like extended guarantees, piling on freebies so the offer looked like you were getting $1,000 worth of stuff for $19, and using endorsed mailings, where someone with a big list of happy customers introduces you and urges them to buy your stuff. And Jay was very successful at translating the proven old-school tactics of Claude Hopkins to modern marketing. Attention-getting headlines, unique selling propositions, long copy, urgent offers, etc. And he was charging huge fees for doing it. These were all revolutionary concepts at the time, though I immediately recognized it as the good stuff from all my reading. This old-school style of balls-to-the-wall advertising is more common now, after a decade of seminars and newsletters on the tactics, but it's still a fresh mystery to most businesses. I knew in my heart this good stuff was the key to not simply making a decent living as a freelancer, but it was the key to parlaying almost secret information into a fortune. Step five. So I became steeped in what was called a new kind of advertising back then. This was the mid-1980s. Writing that seemed extreme because it was so long. The letter I wrote with Jim Rutsch was nearly 20 pages. And because the sales pitch was so intricate and involved. None of the agencies were about to risk the discomfort of their clients with this new extreme stuff. But instinctively, I knew it was the hottest kind of writing a business could use to bring in customers hot and heavy. Screw the agencies anyway. So when Jim Rutsch insisted on filling a pitch with so many details and clumps of giveaway info that the letter actually became a long special report, I didn't blink. I knew it would work, and it did. Step six. By the time I was introduced to Steve Barwick, I was confident I could craft winning copy inside of a hot, proven concept. I was confident because I'd already done it. Step 7. I wasn't afraid of backing up, however, and doing more grunt work when the opportunity to work with Benzavinga came up. I knew I would learn critical new things doing this. I knew it would open up other connections. I put Mr. Pride on the back burner. step eight. So when I met Gary Halbert at one of Jay Abraham's parties, I felt ballsy enough to insist on working with him. I wasn't just cocky. I knew I had the chops because I had proven it by riding winners. I had a track record, and I had taken the time to learn the tricks of the trade and get good at them. I would have never dared to impose myself on him otherwise. Step 9, and through Gary, I met up with various clients who have been faithful to me to the tune of a million smackaroos for a decade. Plus, along the way, I met up with savvy printers, list brokers, media buyers, web designers, and literally hundreds of other high-quality people in the business of making advertising work. I took lessons from each experience, nurtured each new contact, and mastered what I learned in order to condition myself for the next step. This was very important. It was becoming clear by then that each new step was connected to the previous one. Like I said, looking back, it appears as if my career followed a logical path, yet there was nothing logical about it. I was just completely open to every opportunity that came my way. I, in effect, took a huge pay cut by taking time from each week to work with Jay Abraham. In fact, I did work for free for him. I did work for free for him that agencies would have happily paid me thousands of dollars for. I didn't know he was destined to become so famous. I only knew that what he was doing then was hot, and the results he got were stunning. This was the kind of writing I knew I needed to get into. Like I said, none of the ad agencies I freelanced for were going to accept this kind of ballsy, personality-based writing from me. I might still be in L.A. today, some 15 years later, working as a high-paid copy whore for the agencies and making a damn fine living at it, writing limp, gutless copy for insurance agencies and magazine renewal drives. But that's not what I was after. I wanted to break into the top ranks of copywriting, so I kept pushing. How will this one step connected to the invisible next one coming up concept help you? It's impossible to say. What was the path you took just to find me? Through a friend, a series of web surfing sessions, or a mention in someone else's newsletter? Somehow you got here. I'm loading you up with tactics to move even faster along. Your next connection may be the warp speed one you need to quadruple your income. Now, please don't ask to apprentice under me. I already have too many writers I've chosen to work with, and it will be years before anything opens up. In fact, all of the writers I work with are friends of mine. So there's no chance that you're going to get to apprentice under me. But then that's why I've written this course. It kills me that I can't directly help more writers, again, because the world is so starved for good copy. Through this course, I hope to get a whole new generation of writers of all ages, because great copy knows no physical limits, blasting onto the scene. Just by reading this course, the only one of its kind out there, you are essentially apprenticing under me. All this copy you're listening to here is exactly what I tell writers who I work with personally. You're lucky in a way. You don't have to sit there with an interested look on your face while I repeat a long story for the third time, trying to make a point you've already digested a month ago. Then again, repetition is the mother of all expertise. I realize you cannot follow the exact path I took. None of the top writers I know took the exact path to success. But we all earned our reputations through apprenticeship, either alone, plowing through books and mastering the art, or under the tutelage of veteran writers. Through learning the fundamentals from the right sources and honing them to wicked sharpness, and through a disciplined focus on the prize of freedom and independence. You cannot know how your path will play out. I can only tell you that years from now, when you look back, it will look like you've planned it. The path is there because of that spider web of connections I told you about. It won't be a straight line, but as long as you treat each contact as an important step on your path and treat it like the golden opportunity it is, even if it doesn't announce itself as such, I can guarantee that you will move along briskly in your career. I'm going to repeat this because it's so important. You must, one, take care of the things under your control, mastering the fundamentals of great writing. Two, hone your chops constantly and insist on getting better with each new job. Three, never bristle when an opportunity to learn something new involves doing something your precious ego may consider a step down. Four, Nurture the connections you make like your life depended on it. That's the next step I'll take you through, by the way. And lastly, have faith that the path is there, even though you cannot see it clearly. All right, I realize I went over these last points several times. I did this because I know from sorry experience that most of us need repetition to make this stuff stick. When I personally coach writers, I tell these same stories over and over until I get the rolling eyeballs, and I'm merciless. But I was learning, excuse me, when I was learning these steps on my own, I have to tell you, sitting down to write a 12th version of a diet letter, exhausted and pissed off and so friggin' bored with diets and doctors and deadlines that I could scream, these rules were my comfort. Unconscious, sure, but they were a solid comfort. For you, they will be conscious. That's a huge advantage. So let's hear no bitching about my repetition. I'm not going senile. I'm trying to share with you the secrets of the game. I'm trying to make this stick. Okay, I'm glad I got that off my chest. Rule number three, work the system for all it's worth. This is what I call doing the dance. Each person you meet from here on out who is in the industry, whether it's a marketer, printer, another writer, typesetter, designer, or anyone else even vaguely associated with advertising, is to be treated with maximum respect, and then mined for every trace of connective gold he may have. I'm just going to rattle this stuff off in no particular order at all. Go over this section a couple of times to get familiar with it, and then read it again to make sure it sticks with you. Then, if you've got the blood of a true freelancer flowing in your veins, I'll bet you feel an urge to read it even another time, and then even another. When I was starting out, I devoured every sliver of insider information I stumbled across. If I'd had a list like this back then, well, it would have shortcut my path to copywriting stardom by at least a decade, maybe more. Anyhow, here's how I work the system myself. Included here are tips I stole from other writers and snatches of cool advice I only became aware of as I canceled other newbie writers. Let's get after it. 1. Buy yourself a big damn Rolodex, the kind that lets you add and subtract new cards easily. I don't care how much you paid for your fancy handheld computer thingamajig, you do not want to trust this new information you're gathering to electronic bytes on some tiny-ass hard drive that could hiccup and lose it forever. I still have, in a file near my desk, the same battered Rolodex I used 20 years ago when I was starting out. That's how valuable the contacts I made back then are. Side note, keep all your Rolodexes anyway as you use them up, because when transferring info to your new big Rolodex, I've had three Rolodexes total in my career, and I changed them only when I needed a bigger one. Anyway, when you're doing the changeover, you're sure to miss some tiny little tidbit that may become important later on. Once I lost all current numbers for a single important contact I wanted to get a hold of, and only by scrounging up my old Rolodex and calling up old numbers was I able to reconstruct a way to find this guy again. Never throw anything out. Even if you defy me and insist on using your computers for storing your names and numbers, make sure you also have a hard copy Rolodex where everything goes first. Yes, it's ancient technology. It's also the best technology. Hard copies are 3D. You can still read numbers you've crossed out and erased, turned over the card to see what's changed since you've reversed the card last year because they moved, and you can staple multiple cards together, giving yourself a little history of the guy. All this gives you a physical sensation when you use that card. There's depth that instantly reminds you how long you've been dealing with changing and altering that particular entry. Computer databases are more limited. On my Excel spreadsheets, I can't look at an entire line with scrolling to the right, and I can't see how deep the list goes without scrolling down. If I shrink it all to get a feel for the size of the entry, it's too small to read, and anything I delete is gone. In my real-world Rolodex, I have crossed out the name of someone at a company when they left and easily uncrossed the name with an eraser when they were hired back again a year later. I've also been able to detect writing that I had erased just by holding it up to the light.
Best for me is the way I can handwrite in the margins of the card sideways and tape a new card on so easily. You can't do that on a computer. They're too linear. We all think in scribbles and piles, however. Our brains are not like a computer, all neat and tidy and linear. That's why most creative people make notes by hand on paper, so you can scribble, write upside down, connect ideas on opposite parts of the page with long arrows, erase, rewrite, and erase again. No matter how high-tech your office becomes, your best friends will always be plain old paper and pencil. Call this Rolodex, even if it's some other brand you end up getting, your million-dollar Rolodex. That's a term I coined almost 15 years ago, and it's been steadily ripped off ever since. You too will recognize when you hit on a winning phrase, because you'll start to see it all over the place, used by other people. You call it your million-dollar Rolodex because that's what it is. The names you put in there are your stepping stones to earning your first massive fortune. Do not be stingy or too neat when filling out each card. Each time you make a new acquaintance, write everything you know about the guy on a card. All the phone numbers, the addresses, birthdays, number and name of the kids and the spouse, notes on hobbies, his favorite scotch, whether they like dirty jokes or think dancing is evil. Everything you can. You're doing it right when you often have to staple a new card to the old one to accommodate fresh information. Don't get anal about this. It's okay to use different pens, pencils, crayons, labels, whatever to post your information. Tape business cards on if you have to. I'm a fan of a clean desk as the sign of a sick mind, workplace theory. Your Rolodex should look like it's ready to burst at all times. Use it and cherish it as one of your primary tools of the trade. Just yesterday, I added 6 new names to my Rolodex. 6. Each one, I suspect, could be worth 6 figures in added income just from the information and connections they can provide me with down the line. Work it, baby. Very important side note. Immediately write down the name of their secretary or assistant. These people will often be the most important part of the connection you make. Let me illustrate this with a quick story. When I started freelancing for Los Angeles agencies, I instinctively made it a habit to spend some quality time with the receptionist. It was always a she, and she was nearly always stuck out in the lobby alone, either working her ass off for no recognition or bored out of her skull. So I would talk to her, not to flirt or not to talk about myself either. I asked questions about her. No one else did that all day long, unless they were hitting on her. I listened to long stories about her kids, her hubby, her night courses, her car, her cat, the TV shows she saw last night. I was always super polite and always had a fresh pack of gum or candy to offer her. At some places, the receptionist's eyes would actually light up when I walked in. I was a small, bright spot in her dull day. Why do this? I'll tell you. When I called in, I wasn't just another annoying jerk looking for work. Nope. I would greet her by name and she would remember me fondly. The result? I often got shot through to the people I wanted to talk to, even when they were in no interrupt meetings or hiding somewhere in the building. Vice presidents would shake their heads when I came in for face-to-face meetings, marveling at how much the staff liked me, despite the fact I was only there for maybe an hour a week. Another person I got to know at several agencies was the clerk who cut the checks in the accounting department. Always a guy. I don't know why this was so, however. He, too, toiled in near anonymity in a dreary office. I would sometimes stop by just to say hi, and often I would stop by unannounced because the receptionist brushed me through security with a wink, just to pick up my freelance check. Result, I often got paid days before the VP had bothered to write a purchase order for the work I did. That's because clerks, even at lower levels, are like nurses in the hospital. They are treated as less important than the doctors, but they do 90% of the work and often are required to make decisions on their own. If you want to get the real story on anyone's condition in the hospital, by the way, don't ask the doctor, ask the nurse. It's the difference between aloof and barely connected ideas and hands-on in-the-trenches knowledge. I suppose it's dangerous to ignore a protocol like this, but then, as I've said, I've always had a weird thing about authority. I hate bureaucracy with a passion. But I love people, especially the little people who so often never get the credit or attention they deserve. Here's a simple salesman's tactic. Listen heartily to people, and they will think the world of you. Use this knowledge to your advantage whenever possible. You'll need it. As a freelancer, you actually have almost no real power in most businesses, other than the power you take control of early on. 2. Use this million-dollar Rolodex as your invisible assistant. There's a delicate balance between being a good contact and being a bothersome Yahoo. Please make sure you know the difference right now. If you don't know how to work a room, learn. Best place to start, read Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People, and read it well. If you're naturally friendly, you'll do fine. If you tend to cause people to bristle, either because you're rough around the edges or, God forbid, you're a total jerk, you need to change your act pronto. There's little room in the freelance world for assholes. Alpha males do fine if they're not abrasive, but in-your-face tactics don't work when the person you're working for can fire you in a heartbeat. You need to learn the subtle arts of bonding. I talk about this endlessly in Kick-Ass Copywriting Secrets, so I won't go into it much here. Basically, you treat every contact you make with the same salesman's ability to win over a new customer. You, first, listen to him. Second, make him feel fascinating and droll. And three, enjoy his views on what he does. If a printer wants to show you the new press out back, go look at it with a child's awe on Christmas morning. If a businessman wants to talk about his grandkids for an hour, listen with rapt attention. This gets incredibly less onerous than it sounds very quickly. After you've been around the block a few times, you can choose who you work with and thus limit the exposure to boring tales and tours around the lot. In fact, after you're established, you can get by with the insider's wink, a nod, and a short appreciative talk about the biz that lets the other guy know you know how hard he works. You think he's tops, and you could be a conduit for a ton of work down the line. Small warning, do not become friends with these people casually. Do not go out drinking with them unless you have the super advanced skills of a guy who can juggle a heavy social life without offending anyone, because many of the people you meet will be starved for a buddy. And if you make yourself too available, you'll be sucked into all sorts of horrible social events you truly can't afford to waste time on. Now, yes, I count among my longtime friends many clients, printers, list brokers, writers, and what all. But early on, when I didn't know how to moderate my bonding skills, I found myself being invited to the weddings of people I didn't know from Adam, being begged to stop by strangers' houses for Thanksgiving dinners, expected to swap presents with wives I'd never met on Christmas. One typesetter thought I'd make a fine husband for his daughter. You do not want to get trapped by these kinds of social obligations. What you do want is to get a reputation as a friendly guy who's easy to work with, understands the business enough to respect deadlines. Many writers cause problems by missing deadlines and screwing up print schedules for months. And you want to be someone who knows what he's doing. In other words, you want to be recognized as a trustworthy professional. Okay, that's the short version of how to work the room. Specifically, working your Rolodex will be similar and just as important. Why? Connections you can't even see yet. A small businessman you do an ad for may know a printer who can offer tremendous deals on small print runs. The printer can introduce you to a designer who's been hunting for a writer to team up with for a few jobs at an agency. The creative director at the agency can introduce you to other professionals who will share leads and talk about you in glowing terms, and so on. And hey, even if nothing ever comes of your being nice to that small businessman, you've just completed a little more practice at honing your face-to-face chops with people. Don't be shy about asking for referrals or clearly asking him to spread your name around as a favor. If you do good work, it will pay off. Number 3, okay, let's talk about working with agencies. Most towns, and yes, even small ones that barely register on big maps, have advertising agencies. What I found is this: smaller agencies tend to have better writers because often the owner is also the writer. That means there may be a lot of freelance work available, unless they have so much business they absolutely need outside help. As a freelancer, you offer the advantage of being an independent contractor. They don't have to pay your taxes or your Social Security or offer you any benefits. You can come in, write the job, and be gone. Big towns, the ones that warrant a spot on the weather page in USA Today, have tons of agencies. My experience is that most agencies of any size may have one writer on staff who actually has some chops. Most don't even have that. The creative director may know something about copywriting, but often these days designers get promoted to head of that department, which is insane. They will insist that the visuals are more important than the copy, and the ads will reflect that, and they will suck beyond comprehension. Regardless of the town you live in, it's likely that among the agencies, very few will be direct marketing savvy. Some will know how to mail postcards about monthly sales events or run big goofy ads with "bring this coupon to our store" gimmicks, but they won't know the advanced techniques like you, such as making a direct sale in an ad, or generating a ton of leads cost effectively, or more importantly, working those leads from cold to hot. All the tactics I shared with you in Kick-Ass Copywriting Secrets. This is your opening, of course, with the agencies. Since you are steeped in the fundamentals, you will arrive like a shining white knight to save the day. You'll walk a fine line, however. No matter how good you are or how much you know, you have to be diplomatic because they will almost never run what you write as you wrote it, since there's usually someone in the loop whose job it is to piss on everything. They do not want to be educated about advanced direct response tactics because they present themselves as experts to the community and they are in denial at best or scared to death of using result-oriented advertising. Finally, no matter how good you are, they will not hire you without a portfolio. Simple thing, a portfolio. For a writer, it's just a folder with 6 to 10 samples of the work you've done. I actually bought a nice fake leather one with a zipper around the outside that doesn't transparent protective sheets to hold my work in, you know, so the pieces wouldn't get soiled by their filthy paws as they slam my stuff around their desk during the interview. Of course, when you're just beginning, it's hard to put together 6 to 10 samples, isn't it? I had to cheat to get the first couple of jobs. Okay, I didn't actually cheat per se. I elaborated on certain facts. You see, in the first few months of my freelancing days, I actually presented myself as a copywriter / graphic designer. I thought being a one-man agency would sell better. After the first couple of jobs, I realized I could earn more money as a writer alone. Graphic artists, also known as designers, really are near the bottom of the food chain in the advertising world, especially when you consider that most of the great direct response ads ever done had almost no art to them at all. They were just solid columns of copy with a coupon. Designers must deal with all sorts of nasty details that never end, like color separation, print runs, getting the client to like what you've designed, and being totally hip with technical stuff that never stops changing. When I started out as a commercial artist in the late 70s, we were still using X-Acto blades and glue. Every single skill I had perfected back then is now completely obsolete. Computers killed design as I knew it. But that's irrelevant. You aren't a designer. You're a writer, aren't you? As was I. But when I was getting my first jobs, I was faced with the dilemma all rookie writers share. How do you get those first jobs when you need to have already done some jobs to get them? Answer, lie, cheat, and steal. Okay, don't lie, stretch it a bit, and don't cheat, just make do with what you have. And for God's sakes, don't steal. The correct term is actually borrow. I admit it. My portfolio at first consisted of 3 ads I borrowed from a good friend who swore she didn't mind one bit that I was passing off several pages of catalog copy she'd written as mine. I didn't consider it cheating because I really did know how to do it myself. It's just that no one had offered to pay me for doing it yet. And I didn't actually lie. I never said it was my copy. I merely said the examples were examples of the style that I wrote in, and that was true. It was also pathetic. The other 3 examples in my little fake leather folder consisted of a menu I did for a restaurant, an article I'd done for a small publication an old girlfriend had put together, and a few of my cartoons from college. But you know what? It wasn't the portfolio that counted, really. I was being interviewed by marketing executives who were under crushing deadlines, and all they wanted was someone to come in and say they could do the damn job for the money offered in the time promised. I never got turned away without some work. And the first six jobs I did went straight into my portfolio, first as typed manuscripts and later as finished letters or ads, which of course presents you with a totally honest way to put together a portfolio, even before you have your first job. It's not as much fun, but you'll feel better about doing it. Here's the secret. Type up six manuscripts. If you want to get really creative, type up a short direct mail letter selling something the ad agency already sells. Tell the interview that this is the kind of stuff he can expect from you. Or go through a newspaper or magazine and type up ads selling all sorts of different businesses and products you find there. A car ad, a lead generating letter for a retail store, a postcard for a realtor. I never recommend that you lie. It's bad karma, first of all, and will come back to bite you in the ass. But more important, it's not necessary. The interviewer really wants somebody who can do the job for the money available or less in the time promised. That means meeting deadlines. You're going to be an X factor to anyone the first time out. No matter how good your portfolio looks or how nice your tie is, you're a mystery waiting to be solved. Remember that. Put yourself in the interviewer's shoes and realize the pressure he's under trying to find an honest professional writer who can meet a deadline. You're selling yourself, bucko. Let him know. Number four. So, I don't have to tell you about wearing a tie and stuff, do I? Are you that hopeless? After 21 years of freelancing, I don't really care much what people think of my clothes or hairstyle. Heck, I even seldom meet clients I write for anymore. And I refuse, on some principle I've since forgotten, to either shave or grow a full beard. I like the week-old growth look. That's my style. It sometimes startles young children and Republicans, but if I can't look the way I want to look, what's the good of achieving fame? The reason is results. I'm no longer an X factor to anyone. My record is out there. Being a little eccentric adds to my reputation. I show up to speak at seminars in jeans and sneakers and Hawaiian shirts, and the crowd eats it up. But you're not there yet. You still have to play the game, and you will until you earn a reputation that precedes you. Again, you must earn that reputation. I know a lot of writers who think it's all about attitude, which is bullshit. It's all about substance. After you've earned your reputation through results, you can dress and act however you damn well please. I've known top writers who show up at client offices with uncombed hair, smelling of vodka, and wearing the clothes they slept in, and they're treated like kings. Why? Because of the results they get with their copy. So invest in a tie and sports jacket and slacks, shine your shoes, and comb your friggin' hair. Present yourself as much as possible as someone the interviewer might actually know from somewhere. You could be his neighbor or a guy he's played softball with, someone in his social class he can identify with. Don't be a threat. Be the professional advantage he's been hoping for, who will make his job oh so much easier. Make sure he understands you know what he's looking for, and you can deliver. We're talking service here, and used right, it's a way in the door to almost any agency. Quick story. One of the first major freelance jobs I got was with a medium-sized agency just outside of Los Angeles. They were mailing a ton of letters for an insurance company, asking people to check out their rates. The agency works solely with professionals, so I guess I looked like one when I went to interview for the job. The VP glanced at my portfolio without really looking at it and told me about the gig. It was mine if I wanted it. Write a one-page letter from the insurance company to cold leads asking them to mail in a response card. Seemed simple enough, but there was a rub. The insurance company had rejected the first four attempts the agency had made. They had in-house writers who had failed and a couple of the usual suspect freelancers who had also failed. That's why they were looking for fresh blood. Okay, I thought, first big gig and I got to do what experienced writers had already failed to do. Fine. The VP told me the job paid $2,000, which startled me. I would have asked for $500, which showed you I had a lot to learn about freelancing. It also taught me to keep my mouth shut and let the client initiate all discussions about money. Then he asked me when I could get the copy back to him. They were under a crushing deadline. I looked at my watch. It was 4 in the afternoon. I imagined myself back in my little apartment bedroom, which was also my office at the time, scribbling headlines and typing up the manuscript for a one-page letter. Didn't seem like a huge undertaking. "How about tomorrow morning?" I said. "Maybe 10 a.m.?" The vice president stared at me for a minute without blinking. "Okay," he said, finally. So I gathered up the material he gave me, went home, took the phone off the hook, and got busy. I was working with a cruddy typewriter, so it took several hours just to create a clean, error-free manuscript page. That was after I'd figured out the headline and body copy. I constantly referred to my little library of ad books for inspiration and ideas. I finished around dawn, caught a few Z's, showered, dressed, and was back in the Veep's office by 9:30 a.m. with finished manuscript. He stared at me again. Then he read the copy and smiled from ear to ear. It was nothing special to my mind. I just followed the old school tactics of salesmanship. Get attention with the headline, be personable, and make the pitch. One page, no biggie. What I hadn't realized, of course, was that I had just delivered the fastest turnaround on copy the guy had ever seen. He would have given me 2 weeks to do the job if I hadn't offered the overnight version. He thought I was a nutcase, but figured he'd find out one way or another quick enough to go hire someone else if I flaked out. But I didn't flake out. In fact, I had done the job on a professional level that impressed him, delivered it when I said I would. Actually, I delivered it half an hour before I said I would, which had never happened to him before, and I had done it fast. Most freelance writers out there are flaky. They don't get into the gig because they crave independence and big money, but because they can't hold a regular job. You're going to be different. You will meet your deadlines, you will deliver good quality work, and you will earn your money. That mistake I made by turning a job around overnight created a buzz in the agency. That buzz became an instant reputation when the insurance client loved the copy, which again was just basic old school salesmanship. The writers who had failed before me had tried to be cute, treating insurance like a joke. That was dumb. On the next job I got from the agency, I asked for a longer lead time and got it, but I realized I had stumbled onto something. Once you understand the fundamentals of good advertising, it shouldn't take you forever to write anything. It's all about basic salesmanship and putting it into print. So I continued to meet deadlines earlier than expected with top quality work. That got my name passed around among the agencies. Almost instantly, I became one of the top freelancers in Los Angeles. Here are two side notes on this. My work with that agency showed me crucial lessons that have stayed with me. First lesson, the vast majority of in-house copywriters suck at their jobs. They aren't passionate about writing, haven't taken any time to learn from the older books, and worse, have been mentored by clueless ad men who couldn't write their way out of a paper bag. Once I started hanging around in-house writers, my confidence soared. As I said, all that reading and research I did was meant to bring me up to speed with them. Instead, it put me light years ahead of them in knowledge and skill. Very important. Second lesson, I was forced to establish my authority on the job I did. The vice president loved my copy. The insurance client raved about it. It was accepted where 4 other submissions had been rejected. Success? Not yet. The VP introduced me to the freelance designer working on the job and left us in a room to, quote, work it out, unquote. I didn't understand. I had written the letter as a letter. It needed a letterhead and typesetting, minimal design, if any. But astonishingly, the designer immediately told me I had to cut several paragraphs of my copy. Why? Because she had already designed the layout of the piece as a self-mailer that was full of dumb graphics. She had left a small area where the copy should fit, and she was adamant about this. I was in strange waters. I was the new kid on my first big job, dealing with an experienced freelance designer who was out to take control. A voice in my head suggested that I just go along with it, a weak, whiny voice. Screw that. A louder voice won the day. I stayed calm, but inside I let the anger rise. This copy, I said evenly, was just approved by the client after all other submissions had been rejected. You don't cut copy to fit the design. You redo the design to accommodate the copy. This did not go over well, but I stuck to my guns. The vice president was visibly upset that we hadn't worked it out, but he had to agree with me. I was, after all, on the side of the angels. Fundamentally sound salesmanship. Now, I was nice to that designer. I even sent her a couple of design jobs later on, but I would not let her win that argument. My ace in the hole was the client, of course. If it came down to design versus copy, I was pretty sure they would back me up. It was a good, cruel lesson to learn early. I come from the designer ranks, and I truly mean them no harm, but in the real world, the artsy desires of designers have to take a backseat to good advertising. It has to. Sometimes the first thing I do when I consult with a client is to have him fire the in-house designer. If the guy has gotten too much power, his obsession with art will murder the marketing. It's one of the reasons I knew I had to get away from working with agencies exclusively. Designers were becoming creative directors, for crying out loud. There was a growing sense, even among the agencies that called themselves direct response experts, that copy wasn't necessarily king, that design was all important, and it is not. I was driven to the ranks of entrepreneurs because they had their own money on the line when they advertised, so they weren't about to waste it on fancy art when art doesn't sell anything. Okay, I'm not going into that rant again. Agencies can be a great source of freelance work. In fact, I highly recommend you do it. Just be prepared for an ongoing battle between advertising that looks good versus the stuff. Six, agencies aren't hiding. I made a conscious decision to do early freelance work with agencies. Fortunately, I lived in a big city where lots of agencies resided. I roamed from San Diego to north of Los Angeles and even flew to San Francisco once. For a couple of years, I was a real hotshot writer specializing in agency freelance. How did I find them? First, in the want ads. Yep, the Los Angeles Times want ads under advertising, copywriting, not too many ads showed up there though, and writing. Just using the want ads connected me with large agencies, including some worldwide agencies who had just opened new offices on the West Coast, as well as tiny agencies that consisted of a single team of writer-designer, usually a duo who had escaped a larger agency to try it on their own. I also met several agencies that were essentially one guy with a secretary. You can also simply hit the yellow pages and start calling the listed agencies. If they use freelance work, you'll get an interview. They're hungry for talent. Another source was the industry publications like Adweek and AdAge. These days, there's also a directory of agencies published by North American Publishing Company. Check out www.napco.com. Also look at Target Marketing and Inside Direct Mail, formerly Who's Mailing What. Decide what your area is, what cities you're willing to work in, drive to, and deal with. Get the info on the agencies inside that boundary and start working them. Okay, what do you say when you're talking with agencies and who do you talk to? If you're answering an ad, you'll be directed to the right guy. If you are referred by someone else, you begin your interviewing process with whoever you meet first. Agencies follow a loose hierarchy. In larger agencies, you want to talk to the creative director. This person will not be able to sign checks for you, but is in charge of entire projects. If you cold call, ask for the creative director. You may get shunted off to someone else, but start there. Smaller agencies often forget titles. It's just the owner, the designer, the writer, the media buyer, a secretary or two. So if you're cold calling, you start with whoever answers the phone. Here's a simple contact strategy that works. Write up a killer ad for yourself, a one-pager, with a headline something like this. Local freelance copywriter writes simple ads that doubles the customer base for three San Francisco businesses in a row. Dear Mr. Bo Weevil, my name is Bob Jones. I'm an experienced local freelance copywriter whose work you've probably seen around town, in the newspaper, in the mail, the yellow pages, and inside of retail stores. I'm already working with XYZ agency here in town. The creative director there, Jack Jacobs, 213-444 extension 33, will vouch for me. As an alternative sentence, I am currently working with ABC store across town. The owner, Joe Joseph, will be eager to vouch for me. Call him at 213-3333. I meet all deadlines, especially the panicked, need it yesterday kind. I can write all the necessary copy for any project, and I can handle research and brainstorming. I'd love to show you my portfolio and see if I can help you as a freelancer. I have a sense of humor, I work well with everyone, and I know my place when I'm freelancing. I'll be an experienced option you can call on when your regular staff is maxed out. You can reach me or my voicemail anytime at 213-5555. In emergencies, my cell phone is 213-6666. My fax is 213-7777. My email is bj@freelance.com. I'll call you tomorrow just to touch base, and if you like, we can set up a time to meet. Thank you, Bob. Work on this letter as if your career depended on it, because it might. Do you understand what I did in this example? Very important. One, I used a headline that credentialed me immediately as a freelance writer who is local, experienced, very important word there. Creative directors deal with inexperienced writers all the time, and it makes their lives miserable. And I have actual results that I can show them. It's a bold statement that a rookie writer could not make. This is a hot button with agencies, finding talent that has proven they can get the job done. Two, I personalized the letter. That shows him I did some basic research to find out who he was. You can do this by asking around. Most agencies in town know the players at other agencies. Or by doing some simple detective work. Call the agency and gasp. Ask the receptionist for the name of the creative director. If you must play games, tell her you're trying to fax something to the creative director and you need the correct spelling of his name. Then read off the fax number for the agency that you have and ask her if it's the right place to send a fax to the creative director's attention. Here's a tip. Sometimes agency heads will purposely misspell their names in the phone book, and especially in listings. Three, finally, I got specific with names, phone numbers, and details of what I can do. Just as important, I did it short and pithy. I showed I can get across ideas without mumbling, in short, punchy sentences packed with info. In essence, I'm selling him with a real damn ad. I offer service. I take initiative by telling him I'll call tomorrow, thus saving him the trouble. And I answer most of the questions he would have asked about my new any new writer right up front. In short, I make his decision to say yes very easy. You will use this ad several ways. Minus the headline, it's the text for the first conversation you have with people who are in a position to hire you. A shorthand explanation of who you are and why they should even entertain the concept of using your services. B, it's a great letter to send out in a Federal Express envelope. Also try attaching a grabber above the headline, like a lottery ticket, so you can say in a short opening sentence that you may have just made him a millionaire, or a dollar bill, like this, quote, I needed to get your attention right away, and I thought a dollar bill would do the trick. C, finally, I would fax it. Have a one-page cover sheet directing this one-page letter to the right guy. Think of how it might be received, even if you fax it to the wrong department. Hey, here's a fax for Bo Weevil. Looks like an ad. Better get it to him right away. Now, you'll notice that I assumed you had success stories and a full portfolio to show. That's because if you do not have success stories, then you aren't ready to be hitting the agencies. They are busy, always in a panic, and have zero time to hold anyone's hand. Think of a frontline trench in World War I, bombs going off, confusion everywhere, every man for himself. It will be a little scary at first, but scary in a good way, exciting, adrenaline dump city, center of the universe kind of action. It can get addictive. And as a freelancer, you won't even usually be called unless something went wrong. They're over their heads in some project, or someone quit or got fired, or the client hates the first attempts, or whatever. Again, you are the calm, experienced professional who can walk in and do a high-quality job on time for the money available. Side note, many agencies will try to hire you outright because they are hungry for writers who can do the job on time. It's up to you whether you take this offer or not. I was tempted a few times, but working with an agency wasn't my style anymore. I craved the action, freedom, and bigger paychecks of the freelance world. 7. I do not recommend you do your shameless whoring with agencies. The easiest way to get freelance jobs with agencies is to walk in there with a stunning portfolio of winning ads. You can point to them and say, this one pulled 5 times cost. This one brought in 8,000 leads. This one is still running profitably after 2 years, and so on. That's Mr. Confidence in action. Agencies can pay quite well, but if you go in there without a clue how to meet a deadline, you're sowing an instant reputation as a flake. Don't do that. Do your shameless whoring with small private businesses. They also advertise in the one ads. But an even larger source of potential clients comes from the yellow pages. Just pick a niche: dentists, garage door repairmen, landscapers, attorneys, pet groomers. If you have any experience with a particular industry, focus on that. Was your uncle a plumber? Did you just quit as a chemical engineer? Do you know the restaurant business? Remember, when you're starting out, you cannot focus on getting paid. What you want are jobs. You haven't proven to anyone, not clients, not yourself, that you can meet a deadline, that you can sit at your desk and come up with good copy that sells, that you can deal with clients on any level. Get those first jobs out of the way. Jump in the pool and get wet. I wrote menus for restaurants. Fascinating work that. I went way overboard on the imagery, such as mouth-watering slabs of prime beef grilled with a magician's talent on state-of-the-art stoves. Then this was for a friggin' hamburger joint. But I did the job. I worked out the kinks. I met with the client, find out what he wanted, met the deadline, and got paid $30. Took me a week to write it up the way I thought it should be done. Find small businesses who have stupid yellow page ads. There's always one or two who forget to include a phone number or directions to the store. Others have a big photo of their front door as if that had any sales value. Most are pretty clueless. These will not be easy jobs. Call them up. Tell them you're a freelance advertising specialist who works cheap. This is the only time in your career the words "work cheap" will escape your lips. You're busting your cherry here. Money isn't important. Doing the job is. The jobs will not be easy because the client will be clueless. He won't value good advertising. He will only hire you if you work for almost nothing. Don't try to educate him. Just give him a basic ad that sells his business or service or product. Use simple direct response techniques and ask for some sort of action. Write a free report he can hand out. Offer him the benefits of good salesmanship in print. Tip: if you don't understand his business, get him or whoever is the most coherent salesman in the office to give you their basic sales pitch on tape. You record it. Transcribe it yourself. In that transcription, you will find the main benefits and the unique sales position. If they don't have any benefits or a USP, they're probably not going to be in business for very long. The easiest job you can do is to get their sales pitch down on paper. Make it into a letter, just as I describe in Chapter 3 of Kick-Ass Copywriting Secrets. Show them how to mail the letter to potential customers. Finding local businesses who need basic advertising help and offering it to them cheap is the single best way to get your shameless whoring done. It's also a great way to collect real clients when you're ready to launch your career as a lean and mean writing machine. When you can walk into a businessman's office and show him 6 ads you've done for similar establishments and quote the results to him and show him testimonials from satisfied clients and photocopies of canceled checks you've been paid, you lay down your own reputation, whether he's heard of you or not. It's the largest untapped reservoir of potential paying clients in your town. Every single business in town needs advertising. Most of them absolutely suck at it. You arrive with the means to quickly give them ads that bring in results. There are 2 strategies that work here. 1, specialize in 1 or 2 niches and go deep in them so you become an honest expert. Know the lingo, the history, the details, the players in the industry, etc. Read the insider publications. So when you walk into a business, you can walk the walk and talk the talk. And you know how to advertise. You're a professional in their business and the expert on advertising for their particular niche. 2, when you're confident you can create ads that will work, offer to run the first test yourself. Pay for the mailing or for the newspaper ad. Help them track response so they see the results. The deal is they will pay you handsomely if you can prove your ads will work. Not much of a risk, actually, once you know what you're doing. Think about it. Almost no business in your town even knows how to capture the names of customers or what those names are worth to in a lifetime customer. They don't know how to run ads that sell their product outright using guarantees and free stuff that increases the perceived value. They don't know how to run lead generating ads, don't know how to mail to those names and work them from cool to boiling hot. In short, they don't know anything about direct response advertising or marketing. And you do know about it. You've taken the time to get hip to the tactics that work. You've worked out your rookie mistakes, and you have proven to yourself and to other clients that you know how to write copy that sells. You are gold to any business that needs new customers, increased sales, more cash flow. And is there any other kind of... Now, you aren't going to get any jobs with Walmart or Home Depot. They have their own in-house agencies, and they don't use freelancers. But Joe's hardware store is a prime prospect. So is Anytown Pharmacy and ABC Auto Repair, and even the local plumber, dentist, veterinarian, baker, and candlestick maker. Here's the strategy. You can use a version of the same letter we wrote for agencies with a headline. Make it personalized. This is very important. Use lots of references to businesses they might recognize and include people they can call to check you out. Here's an example. Local advertising copywriter writes simple ads that doubles the customer base for three San Francisco businesses in a row. Dear Mr. Boweevil, my name is Bob Jones. I'm an experienced local freelance copywriter whose work you've probably seen around town, in the newspaper, in the mail, the yellow pages, and inside of retail stores. I'm currently working with ABC store across town. The owner, Joe Joseph, will be eager to vouch for me. Call him at 213-3333. And I've written ads for DEF Plumbing, Bozo Banks, and Mom's Retail Store. I meet all deadlines, especially the panicked, need it yesterday kind. I can write all the necessary copy for any project, and I can handle all research and brainstorming. Just let me know what you need, and I can have it for you almost overnight, and you'll see an immediate boost in business. I'd love to show you my portfolio and see if I can help you with ads that work like crazy to bring in new customers, increase your cash flow, and keep your name and reputation hot. I have a sense of humor, I'm experienced, and I work well with everyone. You can reach me or my voicemail anytime at 213-5555. In emergencies, my cell phone is 213-6666. Fax is 213-7777. Email bj@freelance.com. I'll call you tomorrow just to touch base, and if you like, we can set up a time to meet. Thanks, Bob. P.S. I've included some testimonials from other clients you might find interesting. That's the letter. You'll notice I've changed it a bit. Most businesses aren't familiar with the word freelance. You may even have to explain yourself as a, quote, independent one-man agency, unquote, to them. If you're experienced in getting stuff printed, stamped, and mailed, or in dealing with newspapers and getting ads inserted, you may want to offer those services too. I did at first, but I dropped that option quick. Very time consuming, very full of grief. Let the client do the footwork. You're the writer. I wouldn't send a testimonial sheet to most agencies, but I would to regular businesses. You're upping the salesmanship here. Most business owners won't even want to meet you unless they have a dire need for advertising help. Agencies will meet with you even if they can't use you, just to see what you have. So get testimonials. I show you how to write them in kick-ass copywriting secrets. Be short, to the point, one or two sentences max. Get across a major point, like how you took their tired old ads and made them work again, or how you doubled business overnight with a postcard mailing, or how you created a yellow page ad that made the phones ring off the hook. Simply list these testimonials one after the other, and if you only have one or two, put them in the PS of your sales letter. If the businessman giving the testimonial will let you use his full name with a phone number to call, so much the better. Some will be so ecstatic with the help you give them, they'll bend over backwards to help you, yes, even after paying you a fat fee. If they're paranoid about letting our secrets out, then you'll have to dilute the testimonial by using initials and saying local plumber instead of XYZ plumbing. Use what you have. These are great credentials that say this guy is experienced and has success stories. Send your letter to the head guy by Federal Express. Use it as the basic text when you meet in person, and fax it, just like we discussed in the agency section above. Remember that you are not imposing on him. Businesses need ads to survive. Most of them suck at it. You have the chops to help immediately. You're going to be the best thing that happens to him all year. Last note on this part. Does the idea of working on the come line, in other words, making any money you earn dependent on the success of your work, make you sweat? You should know that many top writers ask for no fee whatsoever up front. They only get paid on a commission basis once their ad proves itself as a winner. We'll talk more about this in getting paid. They do this because you're working with proven tactics here. If you have your fundamentals down, and you aren't, then you aren't really risking very much. Yet you are setting up a dramatic way to make your client understand your worth. Again, it's all about Mr. Confidence. Number 8, ask for referrals and testimonials. You know what most small printers are printing all day? Flyers and ads and business cards for small businesses. Most of these flyers will suck completely. So let the printer know you're a hot little copywriter open to working with local clients who need some expert ads created. List brokers are dealing with businesses every day. Businesses who need to mail good direct response letters to lists. Let the broker know you're a writer with a track record. Same with letter shops, photographers, local newspapers and magazines, real estate giveaways. Find the local freelance designers in your area and introduce yourself. Run an ad in the one ads describing yourself and ask for work. Are you online? Find marketing bulletin boards and lurk until someone asks a question you can answer with authority. Do not try to sell your services. That will get you spammed in a hurry. Rather, become the calm voice of expertise. Give away advice and tips. Make sure you're easy to find. That's a great secret among top writers, you know. We don't hold back anything at all when we talk about our craft. We just lay it out there. Anyone who can take good notes will have the exact game plan we would use if they hired us. And you know what? They hire us anyway. Because again, while great advertising isn't brain surgery, it does require actual writing skills. And you only get those by writing. What you do may look easy to an outsider, but to any businessman who struggles trying to create a good ad, your skills are vividly apparent. Look, I don't know anything about the town you live in. If it's a big one, you may have something like a creative guild that meets every week or so. This is the sort of club for professionals in the ad business. They meet for drinks and gossip and just spread the word of their services. I belonged to one in Los Angeles for a year or so. It didn't pay off much in terms of jobs, but I got to feel like a pro for an evening. There are gatherings called lead groups in most towns. They meet at hotels early one morning each week or every other week and include all sorts of business owners and service people. There's one here in Reno that includes several casino owners, construction company owners, printers, ad execs, and marketing mucky-mucks from several different businesses. Is it going to be simple finding all these connections in your town? It should be if your head is straight. I know that no matter where you live, you could drop me there almost penniless, and within a day or two, I will have made vital connections that would lead to high-paying local gigs. So get off your ass and get on the horn. Call hotels and see what conventions are coming up that are open to the public. See if lead groups meet there. Call printers and ask for a tour, and while you're there, leave a card. Work the town like you own it. And when you do something the client loves, get it down on paper as a testimonial. Keep it pithy. Quote, I hired Joe Bazooka here to do my weekly ad for the newspaper, and I can't believe how well it works. Where we used to get maybe 5 people from our old ads, now we get dozens every day. Signed, Jack's Hot Dog Stand. Side note, don't be afraid to reward people who send work your way. In fact, it's not out of line to offer up to 10% of your first fee to the guy who recommended you to the new client. It's not technically a kickback, which is a deplorable mafia tactic where some middleman gets a cut of the pie. No, it's rewarding someone who introduced you to someone you may have never met otherwise. I do, quote, joint venture, unquote, deals all the time with people who have lists I could not easily get to on my own. They endorse me to their private lists, which they built up over the years, and urge their customers to buy my material. For this, I often give them a huge share of what I earn, up to half. It's worth it because, as I said, I could not have otherwise reached this new customer base. And the endorsement of the main guy in these projects is worth a lot. Just his saying, this is something you should buy, can increase sales to that targeted list by 100% or more. Don't be penny wise and pound foolish. 9, become an educator. One of the bad things about knowing how to create great advertising is that it can be a very lonely business. Very few people are pre-sold on the idea of long copy, ballsy headlines, capturing names, and working them. One of the good things about knowing these secrets is that you can stand up and become a voice of reason and truth with total confidence. Because you're not blowing smoke up anyone's ass, you really do have the secrets to making businesses wildly successful. Plus, you're a writer, so you can use your skills to spread your own fame. Write a column about advertising for your local newspaper. This is great, especially in small towns or in cities with neighborhood papers. Be bold. The great secret is that most people out there are dying to be led. If you have the chops, stand up and shout, make noise, become the face of expert advertising. If the local magazine or newspaper won't let you do a column, and offer to do it for free, it is, after all, free advertising for you, then buy space and create your own bot column. It doesn't make any difference. This is a specialty of real estate brokers who often buy full pages and run editorial-style advice columns that give them the look of the big guy on the block. Local talk radio in smaller markets may be ripe for a show. When you're ready to give lectures, don't hesitate to offer your services at seminars. This is a whole unique game, seminars. But there are so damn many of them these days that openings for new lecturers keep opening up. It's advanced stuff, however. Heck, I've even arranged to give my own little seminars locally. Just rented a room at a hotel, advertised for a free seminar, giving away incredible marketing secrets, and let it ride. I tried to avoid risking too much money on these, however. High-risk business, it's a high-risk business, even giving away info free. If I did it again, I would target specific local markets, like, say, dentists or plumbers or bar owners. Then I would mail them several pieces, urging them to attend, teasing them mercilessly with the secrets they will learn, and have a special kit of information to sell them, along with boilerplate ads they could take home and use for their own purposes. And, of course, I would offer my services as an advertising writer and consultant. It's a quick way to establish yourself as the go-to expert in any given industry. Just make sure you have the chops to back up what you promise. Again, when you have results and experience, the world becomes your oyster. Don't do anything that takes a lot of time because you're basically just establishing your name here. You won't get a ton of direct business from this stuff. You'll just be recognized more when you directly contact a business. That's the rub of PR. But you get to soften up local businesses by talking about results, about the bottom line. All other columns and experts in advertising will talk about the ad as if that's the most important thing. It isn't. The most important thing are the results any ad can stir up. Nothing else counts. Business owners will definitely perk up when you start talking numbers about a letter that brought in thousands of new customers, or an ad that consistently sells product through the mail, about a headline change that tripled response rates, about lead generation tactics that doubled the size of a local business, about a website that brought in a flood of new customers. Soften them up while taking on the job of being the local advertising expert. This works. Side note, Dan Kennedy, one of the savviest marketers I know, once confided that no client who had found him through any of the published things he'd written ever asked him what his fee was. They just hired him because his credentials were established in print, and they paid what he demanded. Number 10, offer free consulting to businesses. Run an ad or do some direct calling to smaller businesses where you can actually talk to the guy who signs the checks. Offer to stop by and do a special 10-point marketing evaluation for them, free. Do a real job, too. Ask to see all current advertising, what worked in the past, what doesn't work, what goals they have. In your 10 points, make 5 of them an honest, critical assessment of their current job. Don't be cruel, but be honest. If their ads suck, be diplomatic but firm. By the way, you really want to do this for businesses whose ads suck. Don't waste time on companies where you'd have to break your back to beat their current efforts. The world is crammed with businesses who know they have to advertise and who spend a fortune doing it with crummy results. These are the guys you want to court. You can help them easy, fast, and the results should be so dramatic you'll be a hero. 11. Offer grunt services to large agencies where you need to get a foot in the door. Maybe every agency in your town is already overstocked with copywriters for a while. Don't get mad, get busy. Offer to write the fulfillment stuff for them, everything other than the actual ads. I've done this for agencies, writing a booklet on learning to fly Cessna aircraft was one job. And for large mailers like Phillips Publishing, I wrote some special reports on financial advice. It's not very exciting work, but it gets you in the door. And when you do a great job and meet the deadline and show them you're a total professional, it's easier to get the next freelance gig that comes up. 12. Keep your sales pitch circulating. Never bother anyone with a normal resume. Resumes are boring and seldom read. Plus, savvy businessmen know they're mostly lies anyway. No. Instead of a resume, write a killer 1 or 2 page letter that actually sells your services. Don't be cute, be a salesman. Personalize the letter to each person you send it to. Talk about what you can do for them. Credentialize yourself with testimonials and results you've gotten from other gigs. My best pitch had a California lottery ticket attached. Nice grabber. And I was able to open the letter with the line, and I may have just made you a millionaire. The lottery tickets cost me $1 each. The buzz they created, however, was worth a fortune. Get in the habit of mailing your killer pitch out a lot and follow it up with a phone call. Hi, I'm Jack Jones. I sent you that letter with the lottery ticket attached a few days ago. Did you get it? Don't be pushy, but don't be shy either. If you have to do some shameless whoring with a new contact as a way to get in the door, do it. Unless, of course, you're making too much money sitting around waiting for the phone to ring. 13. Always have business cards handy. Now, I don't have business cards, but that's because I'm in a position not to have them. Unless you have something like a tattoo on your forehead, you do need a business card to help contacts remember who you are. This is the one time in advertising you can actually be cute. I once passed out matchbooks with my name and phone number on them. Memorable. Mostly, though, I just created simple cards with my name and numbers and the term proven professional freelance copywriting on them. When I got smart, I had a second phone line put in the house and often wrote it, that number on the back of the card before handing it over, saying I was giving them my secret phone number. Created a little drama, a sense that they were special. That worked. Tip, do not let a designer do your cards. He will make your phone number so friggin' small you need a microscope to read it. Do the simplest card you can using plain old Times Roman typefaces, the kind I'm using in this body copy of the report you had, and a type size big enough for a squinty-eyed old geezer to read easily from arm's length. I'll say it again. Design has almost no value in great direct response advertising. If you do work with designers, make sure they are absolutely in tune with this. The large mailing houses have designers on staff, but they are all taught that copy is king. Their job, their only job, is to create simple designs that make the copy easy to read. They are at the bottom of the food chain, glorified assistant artists. When they're good, they're worth a high fee because they know how to make the copy easier to read. You don't even realize you're looking at something that was designed, but they are not experts in direct response. 14. Offer grunt services to established writers. We've already talked about this tactic. Basically, if you ever get the opportunity to apprentice under a veteran writer or ad man or marketer, do it. Just make sure you have the chops to do right by him. No writer can use a helper they have to babysit. This is very important. You must know yourself thoroughly. I get letters all the time that go like this. Greetings, Mr. Carlton. I want to be your slave. I'll do anything. I am not a good writer yet, but I just lost my job and my wife's having another baby, and I just know that if you would take me under your wing and teach me everything you know, blah, blah, blah. This stuff makes me mad. You don't get ahead by groveling and begging and hoping somebody will take pity on you, especially in this business, which routinely eats meek people for lunch. So if you're weak on the fundamentals, or you're still wet behind the ears, or you haven't really got anything other than your hopes to offer, don't bother the veterans. We're all way too busy to take on anyone who can't get it together to even work through the basic steps to get good. It's an insult, really, but not as bad as the other side of that coin, which goes like this. Hi, John. Listen, I'm the guy who can turn your life around. If you'll just teach me everything you know, I'll give you the benefit of my amazingly high-powered brain, and I promise not to become a better writer than you for at least a couple of years, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, right, that's who I want in my life, a self-absorbed asshole who shows the trustworthiness of a rattlesnake. So don't come begging and don't come swaggering. The writers I choose to work with are guys I've known for a long time, and this is important because when you work close, you for sure want the other guy to be agreeable and in sync with you. You need rapport and loyalty and talent that has been forged in real-world experience. What works is basic professionalism. You get your chops honed, your fundamentals sharp as swords, and you get some results together. So when you do approach a writer you want to work with, you can say, my name is Jack Jones. I've worked with so-and-so and what's-his-name, who I believe you know. I have done over a dozen writing jobs that resulted in winning controls, and I've written website copy that has captured over 1,000 email names in just a week. If there's anything I can do for you, I will gladly do it free of charge under whatever circumstances you outline. I will leave my ego at home. The chance to apprentice with you for even a short time doing minor work would be exciting for me. If you're interested, call me or email at, etc. Do you understand the difference here? No top writer is interested in saving anyone's life or pulling anyone out of the gutter. But many top writers are interested in someone who can make their life easier by being a self-starter who can handle complex directions, get the job done on time with quality writing, and not expect to be paid much. In truth, you probably will be paid by most writers you work with, but do this. Insists that the first work you do with him is free. In exchange, you get the benefit of learning something from him about writing. Let him lecture you, force you to do multiple rewrites, whatever is necessary. It will advance your career by leaps and bounds. It's a free education worth a fortune. Summary: get your head straight about your worth to the business world and your place in the scheme of things. Be willing to work your way through the rookie stages until you know the fundamentals inside out and have hands-on experience meeting deadlines and dealing with clients. Work your contacts and have faith in the spider web of interconnectedness that exists in the advertising world. Be smart, be confident, establish your authority, and be willing to step back if necessary to get your fundamentals right. No ego, just a burning desire to do what's necessary to succeed. And finally, get paid. That's the next section.